This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
Forgot that we're going to have a short solstice ceremony this morning. So I don't know if we can. It would require just a little scrambling. Anyway, it's the sort of thing we should probably do. So. I promise not to talk very long. Maybe we can make that happen. Just chant the Heart Sutra and offer some tea and then have a special dedication. Well, anyway, we'll see if it happens. Kind of a hard week. I don't know about you guys, but I was pretty sick, acutely sick last Sunday, and then kind of lingeringly sick most of the rest of the week. And that means that the burden of things kind of falls more heavily on some other people, which is uncomfortable. Again. So that's our life, though. At some point, the human situation starts to pinch, and sometimes it pinches quite hard. And then it's good to have a practice to trust, even if, for instance, one is so sick that it's a little hard to locate oneself in practice or something like that. The intensity of what the body is experiencing can just be overwhelming. At which point, it's good if one has established a trust. Practice, even if it appears to be invisible, and even if the liberative quality of each moment seems to be obscured by an extraordinarily bitter taste. This happens. So it's actually not a bad thing if we have these little rehearsals. Sometimes in the popular conception or probably misconception about what's called Zen, it looks like, well, the great Zen masters had disdain for death. I hope they would not be so stupid as to have disdain for such a nominal point of practice and transition, that would be pretty pathetic. So I don't think they had disdain for death at all. I think they understood death as birth and death. In other words, they understood it properly. And thus, they were able to trust it as a place of practice, no matter what it felt or looked or smelled like. And probably, they too had had opportunities for some rehearsal. And central to that practice, and really all practice, of course, is non-attachment. And our most fundamental attachment is to this body-mind. And what we assume is its associated self. And like it or not, when the apparent integrity of that is stressed, it's going to be bitter, a bitter time. So that's why we're urged, you know, to familiarize ourselves with a vow of non-attachment now, when well, things aren't so bitter, not quite so bitter. Or maybe they're not bitter at all. This is, it's today. Today is the 21st, so is next Sunday the Pride March already? My goodness. So, this week is kind of dedicated to no bitterness, kind of. Or the sweet side. And we're, you know, that's part of our human legacy also. But it's good if, even in the midst of the sweet, we don't disdain the bitter. So, how do you do that? Well, it's not that difficult. If we develop the habit of observing this impermanent body, mind, and world, we can recollect that attitude, that study, that practice, even in the midst of having a good time. And that doesn't mean we are inviting the bitter to pollute our sweet experience. It means, as I say, we are not disdaining the bitter in the midst of what is sweet. So, maybe, you know, the solstice is a good time. The summer solstice is a good time to renew that vow. Because now, of course, the light has grown maximally. And as in all things, the light now begins to shrink again. Back and forth, like a heart beating. If the heart does not contract, it cannot expand. So, I don't know, maybe we'll have that little ceremony and it'll be an occasion for us to actually be grateful for the opportunity of that vow and that practice. Because otherwise, we sentient beings do tend to stumble around a lot in the murk. And there's a lot of opportunity for despair and confusion. And as we're taught, well, the winds of karma will carry us hither and yon anyway. So maybe it's good if we can see that as our own body mind, and as the late abbot said, you know, we can cheer as we go whizzing by. I guess it's possible that, you know, your experience has been very different from mine. So that's okay. And you might have a different take on things. That's okay too. Looks like lots of people are away today, otherwise engaged. So sometimes in a small audience, it's difficult to encourage people to maybe ask questions or comment. But I would say this is a pretty important topic. And you might have some insights of your own, or doubts that you'd like to share. As you will recall, when Buddha was dying, he asked three times, okay, now's your chance. Bring up your doubts. And nobody did. So in a way, he was either perhaps gratified, or he thought, oh, wait a minute, you guys, I'm not sure. I don't know if you're all so doubt-free, or you're just being cagey about it. So, anyway, let's see if we have some questions or some discussion. After that, I'm going to go upstairs and put on another dress, and I'm going to come back and see if there's anybody here for a service. And if there is, we'll do one. And if not, that's all right. But we have a lovely cake, courtesy of Kato-san, solstice cake with a beautiful sun wheel on it. Really, really nice. And if you want some of that, you have to do the 8-minute service first. Okay?
What's inside?
What?
What's inside?
I think you have to be there to find out.
Can I answer that for you? I do.
Yeah.
They've got some comments. So as I was trying to gather myself this morning, I got a text from my mother that my great uncle had passed away, which knew was coming. And so it's kind of interesting. I find that when you get those texts, well, it used to get read a text in the past.
It used to be a telegram.
Yeah, telegram, a phone call, something. Or maybe you were there in person, hopefully. I just find it interesting that, I don't know, it's more, it's like, the moment that you kind of start thinking how to serve this whole life and business of this human life. You see this like spinning and running around, spinning and running around all so that you get to this moment of, I heard his death was really painful and really long and really difficult.
Is it your mom's uncle?
This is my grandmother's sister's husband.
Oh, okay.
He was 96, so partially, I guess, when we know that people are up there in the years, it helps a little bit. Hearing that is always concerning because I always think about, you know, being on all those narcotics and trying to feel the pain and kind of going out in the cloud. But
I'm okay with that.
I was going to say, I think I prefer it to the alternative. But
if we have a choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know the late, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
You know, late abbot Steve at the Zen Center, I think they tried quite hard to find the medication place where meditation was still conceivable. And I don't know how that worked. Maybe that was successful. But I also, there's another school, maybe the late founding abbot, you know, Isan would say, why are you worried about that? It's just, if this helps with the pain, go ahead. Don't make that an issue. Like, I must be in full lotus and concentrated before I die. It's like, well, I don't know. Shakyamuni Buddha was lying down. It seems like, okay, that would be all right for us too. So, personally, I'm not so worried about that. But I know there are some practitioners who are concerned that the mind would be sharp as they exit. Myself, not so much. So I'm just telling you, you know, if the question comes up, don't worry about it.
Ideally, like the idea of the mind being sharp, but,
you know?
But we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I only have so much threshold for pain, but I just, you know, so I pray God, but I just, it seems so silly. We do all these little things, you know, we're busy our lives with all these little things, and then it ends up that moment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, he was a rancher, and he was a car mechanic, and you know, sorts of just bizarre stuff, but then like all this, just all these little strings, and
so he's a very, sounds like, physical guy.
Yeah.
And so the, you know, the hemming in of his life was probably very painful, besides any ailments he may have had.
I always thought it was kind of funny, too. He was a super macho rancher who, in his later years, was it's endearing but funny to me, a prize-winning Latchcook rug artist.
I'll be darned. How about that?
He and the ladies at the church, yeah.
Amazing. Well, he had many sides.
It just evolves down this weird path anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, of course, part of our practice hinges on the truth that what you call that moment is this moment. And it's good not to forget that, because then otherwise it's always something that's gonna happen rather than something that's actually happening now, which is what enables us to practice immediately with that dissolving body mind rather than waiting until what we think is the moment, which of course may elude us anyway. You know, constantly hears about people who, well, you know, I think they'll, you know, I give them another hour, and 2 days later, they're still there. So it's like, you never know what the moment is. Right? It's now. And that is the heart of Zazen practice, actually. Which is one reason when we teach, you know, we don't cultivate or attach to discomfort, because that's perverse. And we also don't run from it, because otherwise we'll distort the quality of this immediate moment in a way that makes it hard to see that that moment is this moment. So that's why it's good to find our steadiness in the midst of what's happening now, even if it doesn't really look the way we want steadiness to look. And That's a critically important practice, I would say, for us. So we say summer solstice, the light begins to wane, but the light is always waning and always growing. This is in the nature of things. So it's just another occasion to remind ourselves of that and be grateful for that liberative knowledge that Buddha bequeathed to us. There's my friend, the helicopter, right on cue.
Sure.
Yes.
My parents are in the long, slow process of approaching this time in their lives, this phase. And it's been difficult. It's been close several times
yeah.
in the last 2 years. And now they're stable, but there are new challenges coming up. My father's going to depart 1 month removed.
So wow.
Mm-hmm. In July. And so it's always imminent. But
yeah.
It seems like it keeps getting delayed.
Yeah.
And this gives me time to kind of adjust and imagine how I might react when it does actually happen.
Yeah.
And there are times when I imagine myself like not being able to cope with it at all. And other times I see myself as taking it very philosophically and in a detached way. I don't know exactly how I'll react, but when it happens.
Go away. I don't know if you're comfortable saying what you mean by cope. You say, if you can cope with it. I don't know.
Well, just like I might just break down in tears and not be able to go to work for days and withdraw from the world. I don't know how I'll react to it because there's a lot of... We had a difficult relationship growing up.
Yeah.
And now we've made amends and now we have a good relationship. So that's one way I'm trying to deal with it is making the time that we have left that does have the most quality.
Yeah.
The highest quality to it that it can.
Yeah.
But I'm still playing catch up.
Yeah, sure.
Coping, yeah, I don't know if I'll just break down or if I'll just react to it like, well, it finally happened.
Yeah.
And it concerns me how I might react.
Well, I hope you allow yourself the opportunity to not cope, if by that you mean weeping and staying home for a couple of days. That would seem quite reasonable on the occasion of the death of one's parents. It still seems like coping to me. So I hope you'll leave yourself plenty of room there. Being philosophical about it, I don't know what that would look like either. You hear that from time to time. But my parents' deaths were difficult for me. And I didn't particularly expect it to be otherwise. So it's good if we realize there's plenty of room there, actually, or whatever has to manifest. And at some point, we notice that we're still alive. And something else happens. Yes?
I remember the first significant conversation I had with my father. Maybe I was 5, just enough to understand. First thing he said to me, what I remember vividly was, he told me, I will die.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother will die.
Mm-hmm.
You will die.
Mm-hmm.
I just bawled.
Mm-hmm.
I was 5 years old. I didn't understand it. But that was the message that was repeated over and over and over
mm-hmm.
for the next 40 years,
mm-hmm.
42 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes natural.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and 2 days ago I told my daughter, who's 7, about, you know, in case of emergency, you dial 911. And
yeah.
she was like, no, Mom, are you going to die? But we had not had that conversation with her.
Uh-huh.
But I think we do need to.
Yeah.
I think she needs to get used to the idea that we die.
Yeah.
We don't know when we will die.
Right.
So it's a preparation that they will eventually die, and when they do, you have had time to...
It's not a surprise.
It's not a surprise, it's not a bad thing, it's not a good thing, right. It will happen.
Right. In this culture, you know, I mean, in the U.S., we don't look at it that way enough. You know, we try not to think about it, not to talk about it, and when people are dying, we try to put them somewhere where they're not right under our nose. And this is not healthy. It never was, and it never will be. So that may be changing a bit now. And with the, for instance, the hospice movement in the U.S., that maybe begins to change, but still, this culture is totally death-averse. You just don't want to hear about it. And yet, in entertainment, it's all over the place. You know? So that's probably not accidental. Anyway, some people might think your father was being mean, but I don't think so. I think that was very brave and wise.
Well, it was done in a loving way.
Yeah.
It just, this is the fact of life.
Right.
And I didn't understand enough. I was like, well, you will die, but mm-hmm. yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, happy first day of summer, as they say. as I say, I'll come back with a different dress on and see if there's anybody here. I just finished the little dedication thing because we didn't have one for the summer solstice, I realized. So I'll bring that back too, and we'll just see what happens. And I thank all of you for practicing together today. Have a good Pride week.
May our intention equally extend to every